This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm John Williams. Tom Gimbel is the job expert and founder of the LaSalle Network, and Tom has a few things to say about leadership. Hey, Tom, how are you this morning?
I am fantastic. It's Thanksgiving week, John. I'm great. How are you?
It's afternoon now that I think about it, and I'm doing really well. You sound like you're ready for your turkey.
You know what? We're doing a pilgrimage to Detroit. I'm taking 12 family members for the Bears-Lions game.
Wow. 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 Who are you rooting for?
You know what? I'm a new coach is what I'm rooting for.
When they run out on the field,
you got to root for a win. Bear down.
Yeah, no kidding. Here's my prediction. The Bears are going to overperform. I don't know what that means. All right, let's talk a little bit.
I don't disagree with you.
Let's talk about leadership. You have been 25 years in a business building it up. You've hired people, fired people, and tried to marshal people. What do you have to say about that?
Well, I think leadership is something that there's people who just want to be in charge, and that's not leadership. And there's people that think because they have a title that everyone's going to follow, and that's not leadership. And I'm sure there's a textbook definition to look up, but that anybody can do that on their own. My view of leadership is how you get people to view a common goal and then how you bring them together and understand that everybody's going to have to play different roles and that the value of every role is important. And whether you're the ditch digger or the banker, that society needs everybody and we're reliant on our skills. And I think that leadership is a combination of work ethic and empathy and communication skills. And I think probably the latter is one that doesn't get counted on a lot. But all three of them together really create a wonderful result.
You told producer Pete, don't assume that all people are good people. Why do you say that?
Well, I think that people, I think we're probably all born, human beings are, for the most part, are born as good people. But there is, there's a reason that gym memberships and health clubs and all these things skyrocket and people don't go, is that we all have the ability to, and I'm not saying that's the definition of good or bad, I'm just using it as an analogous situation of, we all want to do something that we know is good for us, but we don't execute on it. And we all know that if somebody's paying us to work 40 or 50 hours a week or to finish a project, that we should, but a lot of us default to procrastination. And so I don't know what the definition, I don't know if it's good versus evil, but it's definitely marginal versus great. And I think that not everybody has the will and the desire to perform at a level for which they're being paid.
Well, speaking of pay, you say that if you want to lead people, is it more important to, you know, get in the trenches with the people, work, give time, or give money? Can you just talk about human contact versus cash as a motivator or as a way to lead people?
For sure. I think you never want to be the lowest paid person because people have responsibilities and bills to pay. But when the delta becomes nominal, why will people stay? And if I'm making $100,000 and I can make $110,000 someplace else, 10% is a fair amount of money. That's a good difference. However, working for somebody who doesn't care about me, somebody who I don't like or respect, that may not be worth 10%. And so you've got to look at it. If the money is you know, almost at an equal playing field, what gets people to want to stay? And that's where leadership comes in. And it's those people knowing that you care.
Yeah.
It's knowing. I always equate the relationship of management. Some people want to say it's like parenting, and I kind of disagree. I think a lot of it is like grandparenting. And it's a thing that I've talked about a lot in other places, but called it corporate grandparenting, is that, you know, our parents punish us, they raise us, they make us do our homework. But sometimes if we're lucky enough to have grandparents in our lives, those relationships teach us lessons. They are the ones that are imprinted in our brain and we don't spend as much time with those people. And I think from a management perspective, if people know what their jobs are and they know what they have to do and by when, sometimes that corporate grandparenting, that little bit of relationship that's very impactful, means even more than a hands-on day-to-day manager for an employee.
Hmm. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm John Williams. Tom Gimbel, the founder of LaSalle Network, is walking us through his 10 things to keep in mind to be a good leader in the workplace. I think we're on to number 5 now. Check your ego on hiring people at the door. Whose ego are we checking here? Is it the person that I'm hiring or my ego?
Well, actually, hopefully it's both. But if as the leader or the manager of the group, you're not able to check your ego at the door, you're going to have a really hard time asking somebody on your team to do that as well. And it's a really interesting tightrope to walk, John, because if somebody's at a certain level, they should have confidence. And there's a really fine line between being confident in your skills and having an ego that rubs people the wrong way. And that's, you know, we see it all the time in our sports teams, right? We love the guy that scores the touchdown and acts like he's been there. We think the person that dances, if we like the dance, is kind of funny. And if it gets a little bit too much and it's obnoxious, we don't like it. And I think, but there's other people that go, oh, the more obnoxious, the better, and they like that. And so we have to realize that different personalities are attracted to different types of leadership. But as the ultimate leader, whether you're the CEO or division president or a vice president, you've got to be able to corral all types of personalities. And so you really have to have a sense of humility to be a great leader.
Why do you say never stop selling as a leader? I mean, of course, we're all selling. What's that got to do with leadership?
Well, because what ends up happening is if you're a leader, you need your team to usually do one of two things, depending on where you are in the organization. One is to create revenue. One is to cut expenses. But either way, you need to add to the bottom line. And from a sales perspective, whether you're in operations or marketing or sales, you're probably a great example for this, John, is that you guys have sales teams at WGN Radio that are out there getting advertising content. But if you're not always thinking of, am I doing the best thing for our advertisers? If I see an advertiser out socially, do I say hello to them or do I act like I don't see them so I can enjoy my dinner, right? It's that type of aspect of no matter what your role is as a leader, whether you're a manager of people or a personality or a key influencer, that you're always thinking, I've got to be selling to make sure that our organization always has the maximum amount of revenue coming in.
You also said that the words you say matter, but the way you say them matters too. What are you talking about there?
I think there's, you know, and I've been working almost 30 years since I got out of college and had my own company for 25 of those years. And the one thing I noticed is there are a lot of smart people out there, a lot. And they really know or understand business in some ways beyond myself or anybody else's perspective, but they don't know how to deliver the message. And when that falls on deaf ears because your tone, the way you say it, whether you're rude, whether you don't engage with people to at least have a dialogue before you roll it out, it rubs people wrong and they turn a deaf ear. And the smartest people can have zero followers. And I don't mean social media followers, zero followers. They close the computer and they want to go home. And you can have somebody who may not be the smartest person, but they're thoughtful. They ask for input, and then they deliver a really thoughtful response back. And that's what people are buying. And just looking, I mean, forgetting political parties, but one of the, you know, Ronald Reagan was called the great communicator. He was also viewed as not the most high IQ intellectual president we've ever had. But people wanted to follow that because he was thoughtful in how he described things. We've got somebody else who's going to be president, whether we like him or not, who says things in a way that turns off a lot of people. And the ideas could be great. We've heard people say his policies are good, his delivery's terrible. Yeah. And those are really important things.
I've had bosses say good job, and that was nice. But I do remember the times somebody would sit down and say, hey, when you did this, you know, they flesh it out a little bit. Give me a paragraph sometimes, not just two words. And it's amazing how you'll carry that paragraph around, you know.
John, I remember this is years and years ago, but it was I was having a meeting with somebody. I had to get to another one. It was the end of the day. I think I had to get home for one of my kids. And I was getting ready to walk out, and I said to the person, I go, you live in the city, right? How are you getting home? They said, oh, I'll take the train or the bus. I said, how about this? Would you mind walking with me to my car so we can finish this conversation? I got to get home, but I don't want it to end. Can we just walk to the car and continue the conversation? And 2 or 3 days later, the person came by my office, and they said, you were rushing out, and the fact that you wanted to continue the conversation as long as you could with me and continued to do that meant the world to me. And sometimes it's right in front of us. It's right in front of us, and we just have to be thoughtful and say, what would make us feel good, and maybe I should do that same thing to somebody else.
About leadership, you say there are dumb questions, y'all. There are dumb questions. What's your point there, Tom Gibble?
Well, there's an expression that a lawyer taught me once, and it was JFGI. Just freaking Google it. And you got to get to a point, John, where if in this day and age, when you and I were coming up through the work world, we didn't have this wonderful internet and search engine and AI and all these other things. And so we had to ask questions or go to an encyclopedia or a dictionary. Today, the tools are in our pocket, in our phone. We carry these computers around, and people can ask questions. And so sometimes we do have people at all age levels, not just entry level, that they're so quick to just want to blurt out something rather than take notes and then go do a little bit of research on their own and then come back. That they're not adding value, and they're actually creating a perception that they're not as sharp as they may be because they're lazy.
And we're talking about the boss here, though. We're not talking about the employee. We're talking about the leadership, right?
Well, we're talking across the board. And what you have with the boss is, I'll tell you this, on the flip side, you'll get employees who are so smart and so quick that they'll say, we talked about this before. And correcting the boss isn't always the right point either. But from a manager and a leader level, to understand what's going on is that sometimes, and I've done this trick before myself, John, is you want to ask dumb questions, yeah, quite frankly, reversing my point, to your staff to see how they answer and how they respond. Sometimes it's not about the answer. It's about the thought process that gets to the answer.
Mm.
And that's where we miss things, and I'm going to stand in my soapbox for 3 seconds, of working remotely, because it's not in the moment. Sometimes it's right after the fact that people think about things, and then you can't get them on Zoom or on Teams or on text. You need to be in the office,
yeah,
because you can follow up with somebody.
I remember somebody said the best meetings are walking out of the meetings. That's where people feel a little more liberated. They've got some information, and now they're chatting freely, and you don't capture that when everybody's just clicking out. 708 texted in and said, wow, John, I love listening to Tom Gimble. His take on work and life is so real and worth heeding. Thank you both. How about that, Tom? Happy Thanksgiving.
You know what? I'm going to eat my turkey, and I'm going to fall asleep happy.
That's Tom Gimble. He's going to watch that football game, too, in person on Thanksgiving Day. So root for the Bears and Tom. Philip Shaw is here now, the senior advisor at Goldstone Financial Group. GoldstoneFinancialGroup.com is his website. Philip, thanks for joining us today. How are you?
I'm doing well, John. Thanks for having me.
How about these markets? What's going on here?
Yeah, we've seen a lot of really strong movement in the market this year in general, and you know, some continued growth since the election, and it's looking like a strong end to the year and a little less volatile than we were expecting.
Is this market real?
By real, do you mean is it just inflated and we're just waiting for everything to fall apart? Because I don't think so.
Really?
I think we've seen a lot of strong earnings coming out of companies. We've seen strong, you know, employment numbers. We've seen a lot of good data that's supporting the moves that we've had over the long term. And you know, everybody forgets, but we had a bear market, we had a downturn all of 18 months ago. You know, we saw the S&P down 25%. This feels a lot closer to the start to a next bull market than it does anything else.
Yeah, you know, somebody told us in the last couple of weeks that bull markets tend to run about 60 months. We're 12 into this one, maybe. So maybe this has got longer legs than one might think if you thought that the reason for the run-up right now is just anticipation of some Trump policies. That's why I ask, how real is this? Like, what is going to happen? Is this a gamble or is this fundamentally supported?
I think generally fundamentally supported. My opinion's always been that the president and the government does not dictate the direction of the stock market. It can influence it a little bit one direction or the other, but it's generally not the reason that the market's going up. I do think that, you know, people are optimistic for a lower regulatory environment. They're optimistic for companies to be able to start doing mergers and acquisitions and have a little less regulatory pressure. And we're seeing some of that in the general markets.
It's funny. It almost sounded like you said we're anxious for companies to do mergers and acquisitions, because I think that's what some people are worried about, too, that what will happen with the loss of regulations is going to be carelessness. You know, we had a market, a massive market correction. We had a hell of a bear market because maybe we weren't sufficiently monitoring banks, brokerage houses, mortgage companies.
Yeah, if we're talking about, you know, the 2008 crisis, there's obviously a need for regulation. We have to be careful, especially when it comes to our financial markets. You know, we saw this 14 months ago, 15 months ago with the regional banking sector as well.
Oh, yeah, right.
And, I think we've become a lot better at catching ourselves, putting in backstops. You know, obviously, you know, last year when that happened, the U.S. government came in and backstopped the FDIC and handled an orderly transition of those regional banks and avoided a crisis. We've become a lot better at it. It's just understanding what regulation do we need and what is just becoming restrictive of our general economy.
Well, I'll talk to you a little bit more about tariffs and so forth here maybe in a minute, but just back to my concern when I say, is this real? It seems to me like the markets are anticipating not only lower regulations, but maybe protectionist policies that in theory to some people are going to help the U.S. economy or the U.S. worker. I don't know how you don't see those as inflationary, but it seems like some bodies out there are banking on the new Trump administration making America greater again. And I wonder if that is in fact going to happen.
Yeah, I worry a little bit about the tariffs and what that could do to, you know, obviously as a country, we import an awful lot. So, you know, if we're tariffing goods coming into the country, how much of an inflation impact is that going to be? I think the goal of the tariffs is trying to get people to manufacture in the states, mm-hmm. or even to respect existing tariff regulations. You know, we have an existing tariff with China, and the way they get around it is they import everything to Mexico and they, you know, manufacture in Mexico with raw goods and import it to the states to avoid tariffs. So I think a little bit of it is just having pieces that we can use internationally to enforce existing regulations. I would be surprised if we had strong tariffs come out of this as an end result. I think that would be inflationary and not a great thing.
So you're probably encouraged then by Donald Trump's appointee for Treasury Secretary.
I'm happy to see serious people being appointed to the positions.
Who aren't outright embracing, you know, 60% tax on China or 20 or 40% on Canada and Mexico.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, Scott Bessin, obviously, for Treasury Secretary, is a strong pick and somebody that's going to be moderate in terms of their take on the economy and international. So having some of those, you know, good-thinking, moderate minds in place ought to give us some good policy going forward.
As for the markets, though, anticipating another Trump administration, you do see various sectors or companies reacting, though, don't you? If you are in green energy, your stock is down. If you are in pharmaceuticals that are made overseas, your stock is down. If you are making fluoride, your stock is up because it might be out of the water system and people are going to want to get it from their dentist. Isn't it interesting how, anticipating the next administration, you do see sectors of the market individually reacting?
It's always interesting to see. And that's the biggest thing is I always tell folks, in general, who's in the presidency is not going to influence the general direction of the market.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, there are always going to be sectors that are heavily influenced by regulation. You know, healthcare and pharmaceuticals, which you mentioned, is very high up on that list of, you know, depending on what the government does, you know, if there's a review of the Affordable Care Act, that's going to obviously influence health insurers. And if there's a change in how we handle pharmaceuticals, that's going to change our, you know, what are we importing versus what are we producing domestically. Like, some of those industries can be very heavily influenced, for sure.
It is interesting to me, too, to see the big stick approach maybe working in that companies like Walmart or Sam's Club, some of the big retailers are already telling their providers to streamline the process. Maybe they didn't feel the need to do that because things were going okay. But if tariffs are in place and prices get higher, maybe to combat that, some of these providers for these stores are actually going to find ways to cut their own costs. I'm not sure how it's all going to wash out, but you do see some companies reacting in a way that maybe they could have a long time ago should they have been so motivated. We're visiting on the Wintrust Business Lunch with Philip Shaw, a senior advisor at Goldstone Financial Group. We'll pick up that conversation here. I want to ask him, too, about interest rates and housing. But right now, let's get you another Business Minute in the newsroom from Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The Illinois Center office complex in Chicago is headed to foreclosure. Cranes reports the building's owner has been hit with a foreclosure lawsuit. The Illinois Center complex is at 111 East Wacker and 233 North Michigan. The lawsuit was filed by Deutsche Bank, and it alleges the building's owner, AmTrust, has failed to make loan payments since January. Illinois Center is one of the largest downtown Chicago office properties to fall into distress. Remote work and high interest rates have negatively impacted the local office market. Legislation has been introduced in Illinois to regulate the use of artificial intelligence by insurance companies in making coverage decisions. Democratic State Representative Bob Morgan of Deerfield filed the bill this week. It would give the Illinois Department of Insurance the necessary regulatory oversight of insurers' use of AI in claims denials. It would effectively ban the sole use of AI to deny care or coverage. The new law would require that healthcare professionals be used to review claims denials. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Time for the business of food. Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And here we are, one of the busiest weeks of the year in our kitchens and one of the most dangerous.
It's been described as a fate worse than death.
That's Dr. Kyron Quinlan at Rush Medical Center.
I am a professor of pediatrics and the division director of general pediatrics here.
And he'll tell us more about his crusade for safety in the kitchen after I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, Dr. Quinlan, and how really bad things can happen in our kitchens.
30 or 40% of all the people in a burn unit are kids, and most of the kids are there not for a fire, but they're there for scalds.
And
these can be disfiguring, life-changing, needing surgery, needing skin grafting.
And it can happen in a blink of an eye.
Somebody has, you know, a hot cup of coffee, and they're holding an 18-month-old. And now that 18-month-old reaches over and hits the cup of coffee and then splatters all over the leg of the child, say. Or there's someone's making hot dogs and the handle of the pot is sticking out over the front of the stovetop. And this 2.5-year-old can reach up and grabs it, pulls it over onto themselves.
And if you're cooking noodles like ramen,
the stickiness of the noodles kind of holds the heat onto the child. And so it makes the burns even more deep.
And the men and women who run the ER and burn units around Chicago?
They're really familiar with the types of burns that happen to young kids related to food preparation and consumption.
And it is so frustrating for them every time a child comes in because these are preventable injuries. Just keep kids away from hot water and the like. Pots and pans can't be regulated, but there's one appliance that Dr. Quinlan and his colleagues at Rush and at the University of Chicago Burn Unit decided it could be made safer.
Seemed like we could actually change the way microwaves are made to protect kids.
More about that tomorrow. Meanwhile, what to do if you or your child is scalded?
Get the material that has caused the burn off and apply something cool, like cool water in a washcloth or something like that, to stop the damage that's happening.
And get medical help if necessary. Please be careful out there. On the food calendar, it's National Cake Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Okay, so Philip Shaw is on the line, senior advisor at Goldstone Financial. Philip, what are you thinking, feeling, hearing about interest rates? And what is it going to take to get them low enough that the real estate market perks back up?
Yeah, so the interest rates right now, the expectation is still we'll have another 0.25% decrease before the end of the year. It's a little bit of a coin flip if you look at public sentiment. Our take on it is we'll see another 0.25% decrease. And hopefully that starts leading the trend back down on interest rates for a mortgage. You know, we really haven't seen them budge much. We're still seeing about, 7% on a 30-year fix.
Yeah.
And until that's down, I'd say into the, 5% range, we're not going to see a lot of housing open up. You know, you still have, the number was shocking. It was like 85% of people holding a mortgage were below 4%. And so if you're looking at refinancing from 4% up to, 7%, that's a pretty drastic change, and most people aren't willing to do it.
Is it just that the people don't want to borrow, or that also home builders don't want to go out and get money at a high rate, and so they're not putting the new inventory up either?
It's really both things. So, we've had a housing shortage as a country for a very long time. You know, really since the 08 crisis, since the crash, we haven't had a strong enough rebound in terms of new home construction. So that's been a big influence on the price of homes. And then, obviously, with the high rates right now, same thing as you were just saying, is people don't want to go out and build at these high rates either. And you couple that along with the high rates to purchase, and it's really putting a lot of strain on our housing market.
And one last thing, you sound fairly bullish, though, about the turn of the corner here in the new year, right?
In general, yeah, I'm optimistic about the future. My take is, people who want to build and grow businesses will do that regardless of who's in office. If there's a lot of regulation, they'll figure it out. If there's not a lot of regulation, they'll figure it out. One is obviously easier than the other, but people who want to build and grow companies, which is the majority of our country and our market, as long as they're incentivized to do that, strong believer that we'll be better off in the future.
Philip Shaw, senior advisor, Goldstone Financial Group, goldstonefinancialgroup.com. Nice to talk to you, Philip. Thank you.
Thank you, John.